land is your land, and this land is my land, from the California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest.
I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from San Luis Obispo. Come along and join us for a fascinating conversation with Dr. Amy Hart, a historian with the California State Parks. Hi, Amy, how are you?
Hello, I'm doing great, Tom.
Cool.
Thanks.
As you know, the reason I wanted to talk to you has to do with a mission you're involved in here and now, and that's going back in time to World War II on the California Central Coast.
That's right. We're launching a brand new museum exhibition on World War II history on the Central Coast.
And that's at the Natural History Museum?
Exactly, at the Morro Bay Museum of Natural History. And the exhibit focuses on our local history, but particularly on the history of World War II events that occurred in our local state parks.
Something that I kind of knew, but I really didn't, was pre-World War II, where Morro Bay State Park is, that was the CCC camp, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Right where the trailers roll in?
Yeah, where the campground is now, and you can still see kind of stacked stone structures and buildings that are left over from the CCCs, including this one sort of restroom facility that is this beautiful stacked stone building right off the kind of main road as you enter the campground. And it looks exactly as it did in the 1930s when the Civilian Conservation Corps came and constructed it.
And it was interesting. I was doing some research on that, and I found this historic photo of the CCC era, and I go, oh my gosh, there's our bathroom.
Yeah.
And then I look closely, and it's not. It's a whole nother facility.
Oh, yeah.
But it's identical. So
yes.
They must have had some blueprint that they went off of.
So it's really interesting, but all the structures completed by the CCCs in the 1930s are now called the park's rustic style. And so they kind of developed their own style that helped guide people into camping and spending time in our outdoor spaces in the wilderness without overly impacting those spaces. So
right.
You see these permanent picnic tables and barbecues and restroom facilities that delineate spaces where people can sleep and recreate without creating a new space every time and overly disturbing the outdoors.
Mm-hmm. Back to CCC camp. What took place there? How large was it? You know, were they on intense?
Yeah, so that is a really interesting time in Morro Bay history when we actually see Morro Bay State Park becoming a state park in 1934 and then immediately welcoming in this Depression-era work program, the Civilian Conservation Corps, to develop this park. And they created many of our trails, many of our campground facilities. They developed bridges and roadways and cleared some of the brush from things like the eucalyptus trees that we still appreciate today. And they created kind of the whole spatial relationship we still follow today in that whole campground.
At some point, the CCC camp closes, World War II comes, and that facility is repurposed, right?
Yeah, exactly. So we kind of had this ready-made campground with barracks already constructed where officers could live, soldiers could live. It was already owned by the state and had been operated by this federal work program. And so it was pretty easy for the military to come in and repurpose those buildings for the war effort.
So you've been working on a presentation focused on World War II on the Central Coast that will be viewable at the Natural History Museum. Tell us about what somebody would see and find.
Yeah, so it's a really interesting exhibit because it includes both informational panels where you can read about this history and see visuals of the military training in the Morro Bay Dunes and photographs from the period in Morro Bay where you see it being developed by the Army. You see all of this infrastructure development taking place. But we also included audio and tactile display elements in this exhibit. And so we have recordings of FDR announcing Pearl Harbor in his famous speech of the day that will live in infamy.
Forever.
Yeah, yeah. So we have all of that playing as you walk into this room.
Wow,
and
that's
powerful. Yeah, yeah. So you kind of become immersed in this feeling of going back in time and experiencing World War II as someone might have on the Central Coast here.
So there were two elements of the military's presence in and around Morro Bay. And the one was the Naval Amphib Training Base, which is incredible in itself. But the under-the-radar element was the coastal defense people. the 54th Regiment. Tell us about that and what you've uncovered.
It's a really interesting part of our history here, and it was instigated by the sinking of an oil tanker called the SS Montebello just off the coast of Cambria, which is the closest that the battles of World War II came to our shores. And it really created this widespread fear along the central coast and meant that blackouts were instigated where people couldn't have lights on after dark, and because they might attract an attack from a Japanese submarine on our shores. And so as part of that, a special coast artillery unit is brought into the central coast to guard the coast and man these large guns that were always on the ready in case of an attack.
And the location of the guns was approximately where?
Yeah, so their headquarters were actually in Morro Bay State Park Campground, once again, that old CCC camp. And then the guns were protecting Avila Beach and up in Morro Strand State Beach, so now another state park location.
Where the oil tanker pier was, right around there?
Exactly, exactly. So that's what they were meant to be protecting. And luckily, one of these attacks never took place, but the Coast Artillery Regiment that was sent down to protect us was the 54th Regiment, which was an all-black regiment.
And fascinating, they were here, hundreds of them, but it was a total 100% segregated unit. Tell us about that dynamic.
Exactly. It's this really sad period in military history, going up through World War II, when our units were still completely segregated. There were black soldiers and white officers. The black soldiers could not become officers, and they were completely segregated in their everyday lives. Even though they were fighting for the same cause, they had to eat in different mess halls, take different transportation units, and recreate in different recreational facilities.
And talk to us about the connection with San Luis Obispo and the segregated black USO.
Yeah, absolutely. So when soldiers wanted to relax and have time to recreate and spend with their families, they would be in these USOs, these facilities where they could have dances, concerts, just kind of take some time away from the war effort. And black soldiers were forced to be in a completely different facility from the white soldiers.
And their facility still exists.
Yeah.
That's the building. Tell us what it is, where it is today.
Absolutely. So you can still see it just off Palm Street by the Palm Theater. It's not something you would call out as a USO. I don't think there's any marker on it.
No signage.
Yeah.
No, other than the guys that built it. And that's the water department for City of SLO today, right?
Right, right. Yeah. So that's something where it shows how this history has really been underrepresented and untold in our stories of World War II. Mm-hmm.
And you have some displays that showcase that dynamic?
We do. We have an entire exhibit panel dedicated to the stories of the 54th Regiment.
How cool. And I heard somewhere that you're going to be doing live in-person presentations.
Yeah, so this World War II exhibition is launching on April 27th with a launch party at the Morro Bay Museum of Natural History from 5 to 8 p.m. And at 5:30 p.m., we're having presentations from Cal Poly History Professor Dr. Margaret Bodemer and local history author Stuart McDowell, who are going to discuss the events of World War II that occurred in our county and beyond.
I spent yesterday in Monterey with Stuart.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a family friend.
Oh, yeah.
And Stuart is the one you mentioned earlier that authored the book about the sinking of the Montebello, which is a new book and news to a lot of people.
Exactly, yeah. So we're going to be selling that book at the Museum of Natural History throughout the duration of this exhibit.
That's really cool. Okay, tell me more.
Yeah, so I can talk about some of my other museum exhibitions that we've been curating. Okay. So it's been nice now that we're slowly starting to open up our state parks museums after the COVID-19 pandemic. And we've really consciously decided that we want to bring in more rotating museum exhibitions so that people will always have something new to see when they visit our local state parks. So particularly at the Spooner Ranch House in Montana de Oro State Park and the Morro Bay Museum of Natural History, we've been bringing in different exhibits that rotate out every few months so that people have a new local history topic to talk about. And ideally, they will always tie in some kind of underrepresented or untold story, something that we don't often think about when we think about Central Coast history.
Give us an example of an upcoming program you're working on.
Okay, so currently, actually right now at the Spooner Ranch House, we collaborated with the Wine History Project of San Luis Obispo County to produce an exhibit on Prohibition history in Montaña de Oro State Park.
And that would include rum runners, right?
Exactly, yeah. So it explores the ways that the Spooner's Cove was used as a smuggling port during Prohibition and how the farmers that farmed along those coastal terraces would help in this operation by smuggling the liquor in with their harvested goods and then driving it into Slough to be sold at the speakeasies there.
How interesting.
Yeah, and it's really great because this exhibit also mentions how Prohibition can really be seen in some ways as an anti-immigrant law.
Oh, wow. Explain that one.
Yeah, so alcohol consumption and particularly homemade wine was really central to the diets and cultures of many Europeans who then came over to the Central Coast, like, of course, the Swiss Italian dairy farmers who made up so much of Harmony and its economy. And so when Prohibition occurred, it was shocking to some of these Europeans that things like homemade wine, which are a central part of their diet, would just be looped in with hard alcohol and liquor and outlawed. Yeah. And so many of them continued making wine in their cellars at home. That's how they paid their farmhands, partially, was through these homemade wine. And it was seen as a cultural norm then.
A couple of years ago, I was talking to a Portuguese guy that grandfather was here around Harmony. And he said, yeah, grandpa would make Portuguese diesel down in the basement.
Yeah. It's a big part of this European cultural history, and it's an interesting part of Prohibition that I think we don't often think about.
Yeah. Okay, more. Another project.
Yeah. So when we first reopened the Spooner Ranch House to public visits following the COVID-19 pandemic, the first traveling exhibit we brought in was called We Are Not Strangers Here, African American Histories in Rural California. And it was this amazing traveling exhibit that explored the Black homesteaders and gold rush miners who inhabited rural areas in early California statehood history. And it brought in this new perspective that I think is often not thought about. And we think of rural homesteaders and gold miners, I'm not sure the African American experience is always the first thing that is presented. And so that offered this really great perspective on the diversity of California history.
Again, the unsung dynamic of the gold rush. My historian friend, Wendy Vorsinger, who specialized in women in California history, talked about some of the African American women who literally kicked butt. I mean, they, you know, the laundry ladies and whatnot made fortunes.
Exactly.
And some of them literally amassed mega fortunes from the gold.
Yeah, I do think these are often the unsung heroes of these stories, and there's very few records left of them. Some of these women were illiterate or didn't leave much a record of their time in California, and so it takes a lot more work to uncover these stories, but it often gives you a completely new perspective that is not the dominant narrative we've been told.
One of the interesting things that I love, like Civil War history, are the journal writers, you know, and it's what a gift. Because at the time, it was no big deal. You know, well, today I did this or whatever. But looking back through the lens of time, it breathes that freshness of here and now life to them.
Yeah, and actually one of the next exhibits that we have coming up at the Spooner Ranch House in Montaña de Oro State Park highlights the lives of pioneer women. So women who came to California just before California statehood, kind of the covered wagon experience. And it shows how difficult it can be to piece together the lives of some of these women if they didn't leave journal entries or other written records to tell the stories of their lives. We're often pulling from census records, birth records, marriage certificates, just things that give you snapshots of their lives.
And then dovetailing back about right now, this month, some of the presentations, there, in addition to your stuff at the state park, there's going to be some focus in San Luis Obispo at the History Center?
Absolutely. So we're partaking in World War II Commemoration Week, which is going on from April 24th through May 1st, with a different event occurring each evening of that week. So we're excited about our event happening Wednesday, April 27th, but it's just one in this long series of events being sponsored by the Slough History Center.
Okay, more. I know you've got one.
Yeah, so I could talk about preservation work, which is kind of the other half of my job, the other side where I do museum exhibitions, and then the other half is historic preservation.
Okay, I got to divert for a moment.
Okay.
A personal passion. I'm a state park volunteer.
Oh, great.
I'm the one that restored the stonework at Morro Bay State
Park. Oh, thank you. That's great work.
So I'm really familiar with that area. I have to go sneak away and find some old stones to borrow.
Yes.
And along the large waterfront parking lot where the marina is, if you look back by the eucalyptus, you know there's these little picnic sites.
Yes.
That were made out of stone.
Yes.
By the CCC. And they're just barely hanging on. I know there's a issue with historians, restoration versus preservation. Is there any thought about restoring those little picnic sites?
Yes, I am so glad that you brought that up, because that is actually one of my kind of pet project long-term goals, is to restore those picnic
nice.
Sites that are partially buried right now
yeah.
in the Morro Bay Marina, and were just completely covered over when
right.
the marina was dredged and that parking lot was created.
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
How cool. I mean, if
yeah.
it was brand new, never happened before, it'd be a great place for a picnic site today.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And they're just sitting there underneath the soil, and I would love to restore them and put in some interpretive signs that people know what mm-hmm. happened there.
And let's dovetail back relative to interpretive sites, signs at Morro Bay State Park. What I always dream and wish and hope for is, Eric Brun, signage where the CCC camp was with some visuals. What's your plan about that?
Yeah, so there are currently a couple of signs on the CCC history in the campground, but I'm always up for more, because
yeah,
I think education
more.
Is always a yeah. good thing.
I want more, bigger, more eye-catching. Are you thinking about that?
Oh, always. Mm-hmm. And especially, I always want to help bring in stories about people whose paths have not been represented well enough in our stories of mm-hmm. slow coast history. So for example, one of my dreams is to add interpretive signage to Harmony Headlands State Park mm-hmm. to discuss the Chinese seaweed farmers that harvested seaweed off the coastal terraces there, whose stories I think are often forgotten.
That's really cool. Okay, more.
I'd say in terms of historic preservation work, our goal as state employees is to create opportunities for people to be able to step back into the past. When they visit our historic sites and our buildings and properties, we want them to feel like they are seeing what someone might see in the early 20th century or the late 19th century or whatever we're trying to present in that period. So, for example, if someone visits the Spooner Ranch House today, they can feel like they're heading back into the early 20th century and being a dairy farmer, mm-hmm. just like the Spooner family was in that period, and what things might have looked like at that time. If they head to Hearst Castle, they'll feel like they're stepping back into the 1930s, and they're a guest of Mr. Hearst during his Hollywood period, mm-hmm. right?
So you are based as a historian for the state at Hearst Castle. That's your mothership, right?
Exactly. That's our district headquarters. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So do you do projects at Hearst Castle, too?
I do, yeah. So there's always a historic preservation project going on at Hearst Castle. It's a very large estate. It's over 100 years old. And so there's always something going on so that we can make sure we're always presenting an accurate version of the past to the people.
To learn more about you and your world, where would you direct a listener?
If people want to learn more about World War II Commemoration Week occurring at the end of April, they can visit the SLO History Center's website at historycenterslo.org.
And to learn more about you?
So to learn more about me, it would actually be fun for people to visit our YouTube channel mm-hmm. that we developed during the COVID-19 pandemic when we couldn't meet with people in person. And to do so, they can just go on YouTube and search SLO Coast District. And a series of videos that we created for California State Parks will come up there.
Dr. Amy Hart, California State Park historian, thank you so much. What a wonderful morning.
Thank you, Tom. Yeah. It was great seeing you.
We need to do part two coming up.
Sounds great.
All right. I'm Tom Wilmer reporting from San Luis Obispo. We will see you at the SLO History Center and Morro Bay State Park.
This land is your land, and this land is my land.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
Valley, this land was made for you and me. I roamed and rambled, and I followed my footsteps to the sparkling sands of her diamond deserts. All around me a voice was sounding, this land was made for you and me. When the sun comes shining, then I was strolling in the wheat fields waving and the dust clouds rolling. Voice was chanting as the fog was lifting, this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, and this land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me. When the sun comes shining, then I was strolling, and the wheat fields waving, the dust clouds rolling, the voice coming chanting, and the fog was lifting, this land was made for you and me.